Yeah.
With the microphone.
Yo, you stand with me.
Stand with me.
Questions?
Okay, why don't you guys, send everybody to see you guys are. I would say 2 seconds and then say, yeah, when was last time, when did you leave?
Okay, I'm Gerald Wertle, I'm a compulsive overeater. From Covina, California, and I co-led the retreat with Irving back in 1997 or 98. I don't remember exactly which, but it was one of those years, and that was a long time ago. But I haven't missed any since then, so good to be here. And I'm Daniel Salazar, the current
co-leader with.
And this is my first retreat as a leader, co-leader, rather.
You're here.
I'm Gil Peters, and I'm going to make up the dates. I think 1996, I co-led with Frank. No, I told you I'm going to make it up. In 96, I led with Mario from the Valley, and in 2000, I believe, is when I led the retreat with Frank. I led retreats number 9 and 13, so you do the math on that. This is the 21st.
David Capulso over here?
Hey, David.
I don't know when I led your retreats.
3 years ago.
8 years ago.
8 years ago. 3 years ago.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, David.
I'm Frank Capulso Reader, and I led with Gil whenever he said we led it.
This is the Kitchen Sink Department, so we're looking for any kind of questions that you guys might have from the guys in the past.
Stuff like, what is the meaning of life?
Some deep stuff.
Mark?
This is for any of the guys, except maybe Daniel, because he mentioned it, and that is, have any of you experienced coming out of that pink cloud and maybe some of the steps you took to get back on that cloud, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I think you're all compulsive over here.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that in the later years of my recovery is I wanted that pink cloud back really, really bad. And I realized that there were no steps that I could take to get back there. And I realized, I think, through a lot of introspection, a lot of writing, that God makes the universe go in one direction only. And that my recovery is ahead of me and not behind me. And I just need to keep going.
Yeah, David Paulson over here.
That's a very good question. Why I want to repeat it so the tape can hear it. What did we do to get off of the, we have pink cloud absence. We feel like, what did we do to get our absence back after that experience? And I think I don't like the pink cloud idea. I think I was given that abstinence, that first abstinence that I had was 10 years long. And I think it was a gift from God. And I was praying for somebody that I think my humility, the ego came back, pride, what's the same in the 12 of 12? It says, here's a list of our character defects, and pride ends the list, something like that. And I think that's what happened to me, I think to get it back, it took a long time. And as far as I'm concerned, other people it doesn't take long. I went to see Bill B. in the hospital in San Diego, and I was so desperate to get my abstinence back. I don't even think I asked how he was doing or what he was. I knew he had asthma, but I don't even think I said, "How are you doing, Bill?" I said, I went there just because I thought Bill could help me, because I really I really have a high regard for Bill. And he told me something I didn't want to hear, and I think it was true, that my relapse was part of my recovery, and I needed to look at it that way and learn from it and keep going, you know. And people would say, well, your next abstinence is not going to be like the last one. I think that's true. This abstinence is not like any of the other ones. Because I think I've had about four times when I've had the obsession removed. And it's just like people told me, you know, I had, you know, very little to do, my effort had very little to do with it, the surrendering to, like our retreat leader said, you know, asking for his direction and being teachable, that becoming teachable and letting go of the defiance and being willing to do, I'm doing what they told me to do when I came in here the first year, but I'm willing to do it now through that incredible experience. That's spiritual. You know, it has nothing to do with my academic acumen or years in the program. You know, somebody said it's like the quality of the recovery. I think that's a really good way to put it. There's a quality to my recovery today that's different than it's ever been before. And I look it up, like I would like to say, it has to do with a lot of my effort. And it has to do with his effort and his grace. I'll say that again. It's a free and merited and warranted gift from God. I really believe that. And now for me.
Yeah, I agree with what he said.
I never had to worry about the pink cloud because I'm red-green colorblind and I use all the pastels, so I don't see pink. But you can't hide from me from camouflage because I see right through camouflage there. As far as the cloud goes, I guess I'm of the opinion that behind every cloud there's a silver lining. And I look for the positives rather than the negatives. And when I put my eyes on the positives, I find the positives. When I put my eyes on the negatives, I find the negatives. So, once again, as Napoleon Hill said, anything that the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. And if you look for the silver lining, you'll find it, because God put it there, and He'll never lie to you. I do want to leave you with an interesting thought, though. People say God is omnipotent, yes, and God can do anything, and that's not true. God cannot do anything. So people say, what? God can't do everything? What can't He do? And the answer is God can't lie. And that's by His own decree. Can you imagine if God could lie? Can you imagine what would happen when you ask God for something and He throws you a zinger just to kicks for kicks? So I said to him, I says, Coach, you mean to say you can't lie? He says, that's right. But he says, Raymond, he says, that's by my own decree. He says, other than that, I'm in charge. Don't forget it, Raymond.
I never thought about this. This is really interesting. And the reason I never thought about it was because I was never on a pink cloud. I never had pink cloud. I've been abstinence by my own count and by my own definition since I came into this program without a relapse. And it is possible you can go through many years of program without a relapse, as long as you keep the abstinence loose enough, that is. But what worked for me and still works for me is that I am an obsessive compulsive, as any of you see me running around this place know. And I came into this program seeing Overeaters Anonymous as my next new job. That this is what I had to do. I got a food plan, I got a sponsor, I got steps, I had to work them. And right from the beginning, and I won't say that it wasn't fun, but that's not what it was about. It was about getting into recovery because I was a very sick puppy before I got into recovery. So once I started it, that became my new obsession, was to stay on this program. And so as it applies to coming off the pain cloud, you know, get off as soon as you can. Realize that this is work, and it's work every single day, and that it never changes. It does get easier, but it never changes. And I've been telling several people this, but I didn't say it last night, so I'll say it now. My sponsor gave this to me early on in my recovery. He said, when it comes to your abstinence, when it comes to your food, if it isn't an option, it isn't a problem. So if somebody waved something seductively in my face, my wife was in the program, talks about sexy food. If someone shows me sexy food, or I go to a place where there's sexy food, it's not mine. It's not on my program. So I don't have to go into that debate whether this is the day I'm going to have some or not. I'm an alcoholic. I don't drink champagne on New Year's Eve. So what the hell am I doing in the Cheesecake Factory looking in the case? It's not mine. And that's what I mean. There's no pain cloud. It's work every single day, and it does get easier. Thanks.
All right. This is the word obsession. Obsession is the fixed idea that I can do something just one time. And once I get started, the compulsion kicks in and I'm unable to stop. If I don't cave into the obsession, the compulsion will never kick in.
I hear people talk about their sponsors, and my sponsor told me to do this, my sponsor told me to do that. I would like to be a better sponsor. And I don't have many sponsorees at all, but I always feel like I'm not being directive enough, or I'm being at times too directive. And I wondered how each of you balance being, I assume you're all sponsors, and how do you balance that directiveness, so to speak? What's the form?
I have a question for Darryl. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know that I have an answer. It seems like that sort of intuitively I'll know what it takes at the moment. But technically, I think that why we're sponsors is, at least in the way I was taught, is to teach people how to live their lives using steps. And that basically, if you stick to business and you keep people on track as far as where they're at in program, what step they're on, what's, you know, is this about turning it over, what is it about? And you have to obviously stick with the truth, because you're not going to be much of a sponsor if you try to whitewash things and you try to sweep them under the rug. So you've got to be honest about where they're at. But in details, we'll go and do this and do that. I'll of course tell people that they have to write on things, but when there's something that's really bothering them, write on it and then give me a call back and doing things like that. But ordinarily, I pretty much give a general direction and let them go to the book and let them do the reading and that.
Thanks for the question, Phil. The question was about how to be a better sponsor. I'll just share my own experience, which is, by the way, my first principle of being a good sponsor is I only share when I actually have experience on it. And if I don't have experience, I suggest that you call somebody who does. But my own experience is when I lived in Washington, D.C. and first got in the program, when I first got in the program in Los Angeles, it didn't seem like I couldn't keep a sponsee to save my life. I mean, people would ask me and then they'd disappear. And that was my whole experience for about, 7 or 8 years. People just kept disappearing on me. And then I moved to Washington, D.C. and I got 2 sponsors and I sponsored both those guys for 8 years straight. I couldn't get rid of them. I mean, I couldn't kill them with a stick. They wouldn't leave me alone. And then I moved back to Los Angeles I've been, basically, I've always had at least 2 sponsees, and one guy I've had pretty much the whole time.
And in terms of being directive, I offer suggestions because I don't like being told what to do myself. So I suggest things, and hopefully they'll figure out for themselves what's you know, where the suggestion is coming from, and usually people follow it. And then the other principle, I try and sponsor by the principles, the 12 principles behind each of the steps. So I'm always going back to things like honesty. What's the honest thing to do in the situation? You know, I always go back to faith and ask people to say the third step prayer. So I'm always referring to the principles as I'm sponsoring. I also have people read every morning. We read a paragraph from the OA 12 and 12 together. Because that way, I figure even if I'm like dead asleep and I have nothing to say to them, they'll get something out of the book, you know. And I get something because I'm listening to them read from the book. And then the final thing I would say about sponsoring is, what's always been real helpful is when I felt like my sponsor really loved and cared about me. And so that way, I mean, you know, that there's a lot of room for error if you know somebody really cares about you. In other words, I can fuck up as a sponsor. If that guy knows that I really love him, then that's healing, you know, for him. Because I think that's a lot of why we're here in the program, is just we're looking for somebody who loves us.
Great. Thanks, Frank. It's Dave here again. I'm kind of like Frank in the respect that I really try to make sure I don't tell people what I think they ought to do, because I sponsor a lot of people, and I like my sponsor told me years ago, there's only one reason to sponsor, and that's for me. You know, because I need to be, I have contact with people on a daily basis, because I have this disease that's always seems to be hanging around, you know, just lifting weights at the other room, like my friend says. And the other reason is I enjoy it. I have a wonderful bunch of friends, and just like they're all different. You know, some people even get to the point where I get to sit and listen to their fifth step and share with them and pray and actually be there when they make some phone calls and forgive somebody. And I think that's the kind I like the best, or to see them go out and encourage them to be a sponsor so they can get some recovery. Because everybody that I've ever met in the program that had long-term recovery was a sponsor and had a sponsor. And that's when I've always done the best, when I have a sponsor. And I, especially if I'm talking about my food, you know, I'm going to have two eggs and an orange for breakfast. What I'm going to, specifically, honestly, what I'm eating, I'm back to that again, you know. And I have a new guy that I'm sponsoring, and he's got me way up here, you know. And you know what I mean. And I'm working real hard to bring him down right here with me, you know. And because it's an honor to that he thinks that much of me that he'd like me to sponsor him, you know. And I appreciate that. I don't know. You know, like I said, this is a way of life for me. You know, I like this way of life. I can't imagine being back on the couch at 1124 West Chase Street eating and not talking to anybody. You know, the comparison is marvelous. You
know. Sponsoring, I have to go back. What do I have that this person may want? That's one. I can't give what I don't have. Also, I need to remember that there's a part of me that will enable a compulsive overeater, and I need to be very careful with that. And the Big Book does talk about in the chapter working with others, says that we may have to. We may have to let them go so they can get hurt more. You know, once again, I really believe this program is made for people who have an IQ of 60 or less. Because we're too damn smart. I can give you a numerous amount of excuses why I should not do a particular thing, because you don't understand. I am different mentality. And because I am different, I was at 400 pounds. So, I need to remember that, look, where am I willing to go? To what length? You know, and another thing, my sponsor, and here's the cool part about what I have with my sponsors. My sponsors, they have emotional sobriety, they have physical sobriety, and they have the spiritual sobriety. And I want that. You know, I don't want someone who's going to tell me what I want to hear. I don't want someone that's going to enable me either. I would much rather get pissed off at someone for telling me the truth than to bullshit me until I die. You know, I don't think that's fair. This is an evil killing sooner or later. You know, and my sponsors have what I want. They have what I want. And I told them, I said, I'll do anything I can with what you guys have. You know, let me have what you have. It's important to have. So, once again, I believe sometimes we just have to let go of some sponsors. You know, I was dropped by a sponsor. She says to me, you don't want to let go of food. You need to go do more research in that field. And I got offended. Because I figured this person doesn't love me. No, they love me enough to let me go get her baby. You know, so a lot of us have to do more research in that area. But for now, you know, if I have a sponsor that has those three areas that I want, that's what I want. Thank you.
I don't sponsor anybody. I'm available for outreach calls, but when I sponsor, I take the time to go with somebody through the first three steps, then in inventory. And the inventory I use is the APOR inventory, APOAR, the Applied Principles of Alcoholic Recovery. It's a 23-page, single-spaced inventory. And it really is comprehensive there. But in order to really do what needs to be done in the way I was raised, I don't have the time now to devote, and I don't want to shortchange anybody. So I am available for outreach calls, and if you've got a sponsor that you're happy with, great. If you need an outreach call or you want to make an outreach call, I'm available, and I will return your call.
Again, Gil, compulsive overeater.
Yep, hi, Gil.
The best way to be directive as a sponsor for me is to be and stay abstinent. That I can't give away what I don't have, so I have no rights to say anything to somebody I sponsor if I'm doing exactly the same thing or worse. So, you know, we talk a lot about walking the walk and talking the talk, and I just heard somewhere in the last year that the really right expression is...
I'm not getting too much on my pedestal, that's good. And the humility.
That what I have to do is walk the talk. That's really what it's about. What I'm saying has to be where my feet are going. And it has to be what I'm doing. And that's why people want me to sponsor them, is because I stay abstinent day to day. I work the steps. I work the principles. When I sponsor somebody, I say, I'm sponsoring you so that we go through the steps. Now, I have one or two people who just are not emotionally available to do the steps. I have one guy who has definitely has some mental retardation, and he's a constant slipper, and all I can hope to do is work on what we call in the business the harm reduction model. And I try to get him each day to stay abstinent and to commit to it. But for most of my sponsees, I want to work the steps. If you don't want to do that with me, then, you know, find somebody else. And that's why I have to limit the number of people that I take. And it's exactly why I didn't want to put my name on the list that Brian sent around. I can't take any more phone calls. I got enough going on, you know? So I have to be totally committed to those people I sponsor. And when they call me, they have to be ready to hear the evidence. You know, they need to know the truth. I'm not telling them what to do. That's not up to me. I don't play God. But I tell them what I think. And if they choose not to do it, and they don't get and stay abstinent, at some point I will say to them, as I have in many occasions, is, I don't think that I'm the right sponsor for you. I'm not firing you, but I'm telling you we're not making progress here, and you're wasting your time. I don't see it as a waste of my time. I stay abstinent each day by getting those phone calls, by having to reinforce what I need to do to stay abstinent. I said, but I'm not helping you. And that's, what do they say, I'm honest but not blunt with people. And to me, that's the best way to be direct. Thanks.
Steve, so I have a follow-up question, that same topic. I experienced a sponsee the other day who called me about the message as a, let's say I was saying as a, and you know, we started talking, and I said, "Well, what's going on with the program?" And we've been working on the fourth step now for 3 years. So, you know, I'm making progress. And I said, "Well, how many of these? Because we have the big book study where I do letters, you know, of resentment letters." And I said, "Well, how many of those letters? When was the last time you wrote?" And he said, "Well, I wrote a letter a couple weeks ago." I said, "How many of those have you written now?" And he says, "3." So he's essentially answered, well, that's not progress, that's not slow progress, it's like nothing. So what would you, if a sponsee is stuck like that to you, do you say, here's what we have to do, or do you just be patient with someone and say, I mean, they're still going to meetings, still absent, but just stop.
There's a question for I tell you my experience. I was really slow in writing my fourth step, and I remember exactly what my sponsor said to me. She said, after asking me several questions like you asked your guy, and she says to me, you know, Darrell, you're not a newcomer anymore, and you need to get moving, and I recommend that you write some every day. So I don't care how much, but some every day. And she would ask me about that.
You know, this isn't a high-mileage question, you can tell. the only thing I would say is exactly what Darrell just said. I tell people in their inventories, commit to me that you answer one question a day. So in your case, this guy needs to write one resentment letter a week, or whatever you decide on. And at the end of the month, you have to let him know that if he's not doing that, then again, you can't help him. You're there for him, but only if he's doing the work. It's not up to you to do the work for him. And so that if he wants you to stay as his sponsor, then he has certain requirements. And it's for his own recovery. Otherwise, he's just stock raving abstinent. You know, he's not working his program.
This is for anyone who'd like to answer it. Have you ever been indecisive about whether you've broken your abstinence? And if you have been in that situation, how have you resolved it?
Have you ever broken your abstinence?
Indecisive.
Indecisive about breaking your abstinence.
Question whether you broke it or not in your own mind.
For me, I hear people say, well, I'm really abstinent. I haven't touched white bread for so long a period of time. But they're still a very large amount of pounds overweight. Now, for me, it's like the guy that says, I can shoot, if I shoot 10 baskets, I'll get 10 baskets. And he starts shooting and finds out that he gets 1 out of 10. Now, does that mean he's still a great basketball player? Not in my opinion. And the thing here where if I'm not showing the results, and I am allegedly, that's a word I picked up somewhere, allegedly working the program, then I'm only kidding myself, and I'm kidding or lying to whoever it is that is my sponsor or mentor or whatever there. I don't believe that I can come up with, well, I didn't realize I was breaking my abstinence because it was a birthday because of cake, and I normally don't eat birthday cake, but this was a special occasion, and I felt that I should participate in it. So that's, I don't go for excuses there. And that's just for me, because that's the way I was raised.
Questions about deciding, how do you decide whether or not you've broken your abstinence or you're indecisive about it? And the first thing I have done is gone to my sponsor and say, look, this is what I did. And, you know, bounce it off another human being. It's going to be more objective in my head. The other thing I learned when I started coming to program at the maintainers meeting in Los Angeles, and at that meeting, the way they defined it was maintenance was you were within 10 pounds of your goal weight. You're maintaining goal weight within 10 pounds. And so the way I knew I was in relapse was when I was no longer within 10 pounds of my goal weight. I mean, obviously something would change because I had gained weight. So at that point I had to say, you know, I'm in relapse. So, and the fact was, I mean, if you look at the way I was eating, I was eating things that I hadn't been eating before. I was eating in quantities I hadn't been eating before. And it showed in the way my clothes fit, and it showed in the selling scale. So those are objective measurements, and I just couldn't bullshit my way through that.
David, again?
My first experience with a goal weight and things like that, being a guy that weighed over 300 pounds when he came in here, was that I would go around and ask people in the program, you know, because when I was on the Gracie food plan and kind of zoomed down to 173 pounds and was just holding on tight to make sure I didn't eat it, and then I leveled off, weighed, measured, and it was perfect, you know. Abstinence, and because I wanted to be like you, because other people who were successful were on Gracie the day lost all their weight. And then I would go around and ask people, well, what do you think? You know, I wear 34 pants, and I had a girlfriend who said, you could lose a few more pounds. Well, I thought, well, she sleeps with me, so she should know. And she was crazy. And I think that's one of the reasons I had. You know, I started eating again and felt all the shame that some of us go through because now I weigh 180. So this is really kind of funny. So now this time I go to this doctor and I'm going to listen to the doctor. You know, and I say, okay, I went down and I got weighed a month or two ago and I weighed whatever, 190, whatever she says. And she says, you can email your doctor now, okay? You know, and I emailed it. She says, you know, the chart says a man your age that's 5'8 should weigh 155 pounds. But I think you feel more comfortable around 180 or 90. I thought, oh my God, you know, but that's not what they told me. You know, the chart said blah, 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 you know. And so I think it's, you know, I'm like I say again, like all the things that other people said, going to my sponsor, that somebody that I trust, that, and you know, the best sponsors I've ever had, and I do the same thing, because what should I wait on? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical person. I think you need to go see a doctor and listen to the doctor. You know, that's working for me. You know, because I can go around the room and ask everybody, just like all of us, what we think about being a sponsor. You know, and with all due respect, I have a firm believer that I have never fired anybody. I know how shame-based the people are that I work with. 99% of the people in 32 years that have asked me to sponsor them never call me. I don't know if you've had that experience or not. They see you in the meeting and say, will you be my sponsor? You bet. Call me anytime. I try to leave the door as open as I can. Most of the people don't call me. You know, I never hear from them. Or people that I sponsor go for a while and they quit calling me. But you know, what's really neat is after a while, when they, like somebody said, go through the pain, I want them to be able to call me back. You know, so that's my approach. But that's me. I'm sticking with it.
In my own personal history, I was about 6 months abstinent, and I went to my first birthday celebration at home, and it was my son's birthday, and his girlfriend was there, and she put a piece of cake in front of me, and I inhaled that thing. It was gone. And I felt like crap, and I went to my meeting that night, and I told the people there that I had broken my abstinence, and everybody said, call your sponsor. So I called my sponsor, and she said, it's really up to you whether you want to declare your abstinence at an end, but she said, I think you really want to look at the bigger picture. You have 6 months right now, and she said, I personally think it's worth hanging on to, and that the disease would like nothing better than for you to say your abstinence is now over, because now it can come at you from the angle, all you have is 1 day or 2 days, what's the big deal, why not start over? Tomorrow, just go ahead and eat this today. And I thought about it, and I've just been honest about that incident happening, but I picked up my abstinence at that point and just kept on going. And that was it. And more recently, this past year, I got to the place of where I didn't feel comfortable with calling myself abstinent. I'm still down 120 pounds from my top weight. But I don't think that that's what the deal is. I think the deal is how you're eating, and I was eating more than 3 meals a day, and some of them didn't have a beginning and end, and it looked an awful lot like the way it was before I came here, and I go to almost a meeting a day, and this is about rigorous honesty, and this is about and if you're gonna keep coming back, I don't think you want to be doing that without being honest. Because as soon as I have food become my confidant, I'm in big trouble. And that me and the food are going to have this secret, and that doesn't work. I know that because I've been there. So being honest, one of the things I found that I heard years ago, and I believe it, and I do it. Is that that once you get into maintenance, that you weigh yourself once a week, because the scale no longer weighs your pounds, it weighs the level of honesty in your program. And so you can't, the scale doesn't lie. So if I get on the scale every week, every Thursday, which I do, and the scale starts going up, then I got to know something's going on. And I have to look at that.
I used to say that I was big bone, 400 pounds. And then my sponsor said, have you ever seen a fat skeleton?
Okay, so I'm a hard ass. And I again, work in the field of addictions. And when clients come in to me and they say, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, what do you think? I would say to them, and I always say to them, I can't answer that, only you can answer that. But what I can tell you is I've never had a client come in here who wasn't an alcoholic who asked me that question. So am I indecisive about my abstinence? You know what your abstinence is. You know what the bottom line is. I know, you know, I didn't have to write it down. My sponsor knows every in and out of what is acceptable on my food plan. I'm a 301 guy, as I said last night. If I eat in between many meals, if I eat a fourth meal, I'm not abstinent. If I eat sugar, if I eat anything crunchy, salty, you know, greasy, that I committed that I don't eat, I'm not abstinent. Now, do I get a little icky with, you know, on the edges of my abstinence? Yeah, sometimes I'll have a second plate when I usually don't eat a second plate. There's sometimes I'll eat some fried foods, but I don't eat chips, I don't eat popcorn, I don't eat pretzels, I don't eat taco chips, I don't eat sugar in any form. And if I do, I've broken my abstinence. Now, is that going to set me into a tailspin and have me go back into my disease? I sure hope not. I have to get honest with my sponsor and get back on the horse. But what I've heard from a lot of people over the years is that there are people who've been abstinent for a very long time who don't know how long they've been abstinent, because it's not about number of days, it's about how was I today with my food. And then that's really what we want to look at. So if I'm asking myself the question, was that something I should have eaten? I should have eaten it. Because I don't ever have to ask myself that question, because I know what the answer is. So, if I don't want to have to deal with myself, then I don't need it.
No question.
Oh.
There was a time, a holiday before I got in the program, Halloween. And after Halloween, they put candy on sale. And I love Snickers candy bars. So I bought a bag of Snickers, the baby candy bars. I bought a bag of Milky Ways, and I bought a bag of the Three Musketeers. Now, if you're intelligent as I am, and unique as I am, and certainly as different and special as I am, you only eat one bar out of a bag at a time. Okay? So I cut open the Snickers bar, candy bar, and I opened the bag and I took one bar out only. That's a little tiny bar, almost nothing, and ate it. And then I thought, you know, I really should count how many are in each bag. I realized in counting each bag that they were an uneven amount. So I took one from the second bag and one from the third bag and ate those. Then I looked at it and I said, you know, Ray, the three of them together don't equal one normal size bar. And you're off by just one bar. Now, being the mathematician that I am, there I ate one more out of the first bag. And then I realized that something was awry, and I was still out of balance, so I had to do the other two. Within a couple of hours, all three bags were gone there. And I knew at that time, I said, you know, I don't know anything about eating. And I wondered why I kept gaining weight all the time. And it was because I was unique, I was special, I was different. I was so tall. You're so tall. Yeah, well, I got news for you that the bars don't judge anything about the tallness. They just go into your gut and put pounds on. So when I got in OA, I said, that's it. No Snickers bars, no candy bars of any kind. So now on Halloween, when the kids bring them or bring them home, when they used to, as they're getting grown now, we just say, give them to the children's hospital. And we don't even open the bag.
For Halloween, I passed out sweet and moon packets.
Yeah, this whole abstinence thing always sort of is curious to me. Would you guys mind me sharing what your abstinence is? Is that, well,
Well, there's, my abstinence is in three ways. I have a spiritual abstinence, and I have an emotional abstinence, and I have a physical, which is my food abstinence. Those three are very important to me. If I start out the day in a spiritual abstinence, which I mean I turn over my Word of My Life, Word of Care of God, page 86 of the big book, that I ask to be divorced of selfishness, self-seeking, and self-pity, I got one edge down. The other one, I try to be of service to others. And the other one, I try to keep my food to, use a word, but to normal proportions. I was discussing this earlier with a friend. You know, my eyes don't understand that 6 ounces to me equals a pound and a half. You know, 1 ounce of salad means 2 cabbage heads, 2 heads of lettuce. You know, so my eyesight doesn't see it very well. So this is why I lived on 3 buffets with nothing in between. Because to me, those were ounces. And remember, we're talking pounds of food. So I had to go back for a time being to know what a cup looks like. To look and see what exactly 6 ounces looks like. So I can get a grasp of reality. So I can get a grasp of reality because my disease does not live in reality, it lives in fantasy. I do a presentation with alcoholics and I show them what 1.5 ounces of whiskey looks like, what 5 ounces of wine looks like, and what 12 ounces of beer looks like. You should see their jaws drop. They go, that's impossible. You mean that's 1.5 ounces of booze that I'm supposed to have in my mixed drink? One guy says to me, you know, when I mix my drinks, I pour it all the way to the top and I just go like this with a squirt of cola so it'll give it a little color, and that's my drink. Well, that's the same thing with me. What one cup of looks like, food looks like, as opposed to the cups that I used to think, my cups were buckets. You know, and I don't, and like I said, the only way that I justified all that amount was through washing it down with a Diet Coke. That's how I eliminated all the calories. Once again, my disease lives in fantasy, it doesn't live in reality. So for a time being, I had to get back into knowing exactly what these things look like. So 3 meals, normal size. No seconds or thirds. You know, what's given today, and if someone should serve me that food, that's what I'm supposed to have. But if I have to serve it myself, I try to keep it as balanced as possible.
Yeah, I think in responding to the question, I think that it's important for us to turn back the clock a little bit and to recognize that OA changed the definition of abstinence at a point in time a few years ago and substituted plan of eating for the tool of the program. They moved it from being a tool. And so the abstinence today is more than just what you eat, the concept of abstinence and program. And so, like Dan was saying about service, being of service, doing the reading, doing the personal reflection on a daily basis, those types of things would be part of it. Plan of eating, basically, when I get into trouble, I need to have structure, and right now my structure would be real close to gray sheet, no flour, no white flour, no sugar. 4 ounces of protein and a certain amount of vegetables and weighing and measuring. And for the most part, I, haven't been weighing and measuring up here, but for the most part, trying to keep it moderate. We went down to Bureau of Funds yesterday for lunch, and rather than go into the salad bar where you help yourself, I went to the counter and told the guy I wanted 4 ounces of this and I want half a pound of that, and I got what I was supposed to have. If I had gone into the other room, I probably would have got $25 worth of stuff on the plate, and that's just the way I am.
Yeah, Dave, also over here. That I did owe all of that thing because the clarity that's been given me in the last year is that it's much better for me, since there's a great deal of freedom in owning a cup and a half a cup and a third of a cup and a quarter of a cup, and following the food plan that the doctor gave me, because from my experience of 32 years, I end up looking at what I wrote down to eat, and somehow things get added on there. You know, how did that happen? How did years ago a cup of non-fat milk turn into a yogurt cone at Thrifty's? It's a dairy. No, it's not. You know, it turned into a dairy. You know, and so you know, I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows, you know. My little granddaughter leaves food on her plate. I never do that. You know, so, you know, I'm the kind of overeater, and I think maybe everybody's all different, you know. In some respects or another, some people can't eat any flour, and some of us can eat a little bit of flour. And some people can't eat bananas. Some of us can eat bananas. It's not a big issue. So, I really know that when my wife bakes those little round things in the pan for the neighbors, that ain't my food. You know, a dessert, like one of my spouse said, you know, Dave, he looked it up in the, somewhere in the book, said dessert, fruit. You know, and that was really disappointing, you know. Could be, you know, but I eat a piece of fruit at every meal. Now, us old grace eaters, we only got one at breakfast, so I had to let go a little bit of the Gracie guilt, but the doctor said, the doctor that's treating me now for my health and well-being, says not only do I need to eat these meals, this food plan every day, but I need to exercise vigorously, which means walking. And then she said, there's nothing wrong with you walking every day and go up some hills. So I'm able to do that at my age. That's part of my way of living. I have a heart and lungs that need to be exercised, so somehow that needs to happen for me. Because I sure like seeing little 7-year-old Gracie grow up to be get married or whatever when she's 29, and a lot of other things. And I like to come here every year. There's a certain richness that following that food plan and the freedom it gives me. I'm not ashamed of what I come up here and eat anymore. And I've come up here and eat a whole lot of breakfast and a whole lot of stuff that I didn't eat today. But today it happened by the grace of God, not by the grace of Dave. You know, that's like the guy you're saying. It's a, you know, that spiritual is the only reason I'm doing it. You know, there's a connection that I have with God today that I didn't have 2 years ago. You know.
Thanks for the question, Mike. One of the things that was helpful for me is when I heard that abstinence is what I don't eat and food plan is what I do eat. And so that's kind of the way I think of it. And what I told my sponsor on the way up here was that my current abstinence is nothing I can buy in a ballpark. So that, you know, no pizza, no hot dogs, no popcorn, no peanuts, nothing salty, crunchy, greasy. Because that's all summer long, that's what's been calling to me, and that's what's been getting me into trouble, chips and stuff like that. Stuff I can buy at ballpark, pretzels. You know. And so that's my abstinence. My food plan is 3 meals a day and the possibility of a late afternoon snack, particularly if dinner is going to be late. I also don't eat refined sugar. And you know, the meals are you know, you know, an ideal meal is I have one starch serving, protein, vegetables, fruit, and seconds. And, you know, like I said, today I did that.
Can I say one more thing? We haven't said the G word this weekend. One of the seven deadly sins in the 12 and 12 is gluttony. I am a glutton. I don't have any problem with that. If this was called Gluttons Anonymous, probably less people would come here to do. And I would be a member of it today, because that's my problem, is gluttony. And the book says, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that only God can take away my character defects in the fifth step. You know, that is a character defect. Maybe my disease is a character defect. Oops. On you.
If it looks like a duck, and it paddles like a duck, it's got web feet like a duck, it's on the water and everything, it's not an eagle. And whether you call it a plan of eating, or a food plan, or anything else, the thing that I'm most concerned about is I have a guide that says, if I eat the basic four, and that happens to be plan one under the current dignity of choice, if I eat plan one there, and if I weigh and measure the food exactly as it's written out, I'm going to either lose or maintain my weight depending on where I'm at. Now, I used Gracie when I first came in, which is not nutritionally sound. I lost 15 pounds in 10 days on Gracie. Of course, my sponsor said, get off that, get off of it right now, and change over to plan one. So I went to plan one, and even today, I weigh and measure my meals most of the time. Normally for breakfast, I'll have a half a cup of cottage cheese. And what do I mean by half a cup? I mean you scoop up a half a cup of cottage cheese and run a knife blade across the top. That's a half a cup. Okay? Now I'm just sticking up way over the top. Run a knife blade across it, because that's what I saw. A knife blade across it means it's a flat half a cup. Okay? I have 11 pieces of the pineapple chunks, stone pineapple chunks. And I have 7 low-fat Triscuit squares and coffee. Now, that's one of the basic breakfasts that I eat. If I eat, sometimes I eat a banana burrito. That's a banana with some peanut butter on it, rolled up in a tortilla. That's called a banana burrito. Try it. It's good. Okay. So this is basic. I eat real simple, but again, as I said, my food plan is I can eat anything I want, in any quantity I want, any time of the day or night I want, as long as I'm willing to pay the price. And as of today, as of tonight, I've got 37 years and one day back-to-back abstinence.
Thanks. Again, my abstinence has a bottom line, and it's committed. And so there's certain foods I eat, certain foods I don't eat. I don't eat any sugar to the best of my ability. I used to look for salad dressings that had no sugar. Even the seventh ingredient was not sufficient for me. Now I don't eat salad dressings because I wanted I went to a holistic nutritionist, and she told me what's good and bad for my body, and I was telling somebody at dinner time, I did this weird stuff, it's really hocus pocus, called muscle testing. You hold your arm out, and they'll put an essence of whatever the food stuff is, in my case, on the bladder, or on the kidneys, and then they'll try to push my arm down. My arm goes down, then it's something that I'm allergic to. My arm stays solid, it's something I can eat. So I can eat things like almonds, I can eat walnuts, I can eat pecans, can't eat cashews. Can't eat peanuts because peanuts are highly fermented and there's a lot of mold on them. I don't eat mushrooms, which I didn't eat before anyhow, so that wasn't a big loss. I don't eat vinegar, for example. I can't eat anything that's fermented. They found that I was, if not lactose intolerant, my body doesn't process it well. I do. I keep the lactic acid in my muscles. So I don't eat any dairy. So I found rice milk. I found rice cheese. I don't eat anything that's white. No white flour. I don't eat white rice. I can't eat yeast. I can eat wheat. So for breakfast, I'll have Barber's shredded wheat because there's nothing in it but shredded wheat pillows. I'll have three of them, and if I think I'm not going to eat dinner or lunch until later, I'll have four of them, and I'll smash them up with some rice milk, put a banana in, and maybe some grapes, and that's breakfast. Some days, if I'm out, I'll have eggs, and I can have some protein with it. So if I want to have some sausage or bacon, I can eat that. Better turkey sausage. Lunch is usually small amount of meat and more vegetables than meat. I eat a lot of stir fry every day. A lot of that stuff, And we have a garden in the back of my house, so I'm eating a lot of zucchini and summer squash right now. I'll eat spinach. So I heard somebody talking about this. The more bright the color of the vegetables, the healthier it is for you. Well, I eat a lot of good, healthy, green vegetables. And my dinner is usually some sort of protein and vegetables. Every once in a while, I'll have whole wheat pasta with a little bit of tomato sauce. Tomatoes isn't a great vegetable for me or a fruit for me, so I stay away from that. I eat it a maximum of three times a week. I'm being very specific here because you asked. My mother rule is always, after dinner, how much fruit do I cut up into a bowl and how many nuts do I put in? Because you could leave me in a corner with that stuff and find me bloated and dead the next day, because that's the stuff that I love to eat. So that's in my sugar food category, and I have to be careful with that. But I never dip my hand into a bag or a bowl of nuts, because I can't stop once I start. If I'm going to eat the stuff, it's going to be in combination with one of the other foods that I eat. I don't eat white rice, like I said, but I'll eat brown rice. And I eat grains. It's not surprising, I suppose, that because I don't eat yeast now and I can't eat white flour, I'm eating a lot of whole wheat matzo. Right? The stuff still tastes slightly stale, but if I put some almond butter on it and I cut up a couple slices of a peach on top of it and then put another piece of the matzo on top, again, that's nirvana to me. That's as good as it gets. That's my food orgasm these days. That's as great as it is. So that's specifically what I eat. I won't recommend it for anybody, but it works for me. And it's only three times a day, and there is no exception.
Can I just make a comment?
One of the things I want to say is that you've heard six different guys, six of us, and all of us have different definitions of abstinence. And I think the important thing is to understand that they're all right. And that abstinence is a gift from God, and we have a God of diversity, and He doesn't make two of anything the same. And I can't do Ray's abstinence, and I can't do Gil's abstinence, but I don't have to. I have to do mine, the gift that God's given me, and I think that each one of us has to do the same thing. And so we have to honor the gift that we've each been given.
All right, so that answers the question. And I'm still baffled with the banana burrito.
I feel like calling the Mexican police squad. Anyway.
maybe one or two people. How do you deal when you're in a situation where you get asked to a meeting and then there's not your type of food? How do you deal with that? Like, say you're going to a meeting and then they're all there serving pizza. How do you deal with it?
For me, I don't leave my house expecting, birds to drop food on my lap. I prepare ahead of time. especially if I'm going to go elsewhere where I don't know what's going to happen, I have to prepare. To me, abstinence or following my food plan is like having a child. You don't just get up and go. You have to make preparations before you leave. Where are you going to go? What's going to happen over there? All these are very important. This is my life or death situation. This is my health. So I always prepare ahead of time. So if I'm going to go somewhere where there's not going to have any food that really is not going to be good for me, why waste my time with it? I'd rather eat something good. But once again, I have to stop with that mentality of I'm being deprived. Do you know they have an enhanced pizza since it's been invented? It's the same thing. But yet my head says, you know, we should try it because body has done something different to it. You know, and I walk around feeling deprived. So I prepare ahead of time. That's it. I cannot expect that the person who's been hosting a social event to meet my needs. That's not their responsibility. It's mine. You know, so that's what I got.
All right. And in my experience, I haven't had a piece of pizza in 21 years, and it's just not an option. And it doesn't matter who's serving it or what. My 8-year-old wanted to go to Chuck E. Cheese the other day, just having me, and he had his pizza, and I had salad from the salad bar, and I walked across the parking lot to the El Pollo Loco, and I got a couple of pieces of chicken over there, and that was it, and it was no big deal.
Dave, postal reader, that's why I'm here. This is a good question. And a guy years ago, Bill, a guy named Bill down in San Diego, he goes to swap meet all the time. And we'd have lunch after the meeting. And he does this, the guy brings a cooler into Carl Jr., you know. And I thought, well, this guy's weird, you know. But, you know, the guy's been abstaining all this time, you know, because he doesn't go out like all the, some of the other guys said without precaution, you know, and he has his food in there. And so I'm not original. I have my cooler here. I knew I was coming up on the train. For me, Amtrak doesn't have anything I can eat on the train except maybe the bottle of tea. And I'm not going to ride on the train for 6 hours and miss lunch, you know. So my dear wife, made me a wonderful salad and a bunch of carrots and my turkey meat and a piece of fruit, and I'm covered, you know. I'm all set, you know. And I think Ray said the definition of responsibility is responding to the ability that God, that's why I said it, the way I said it. He has another way of saying it, that God gave me. I don't want to. Dottie Shore used to say that our abstinence was the pearl of great price, and that a pearl is caused by a great deal of irritation. I think that's true. I don't think she lied to us. And so I need to take that pearl. It's a valuable thing, and treat it that way, my abstinence that way. And so that's one of the ways that I can avoid saying, oh shit, there's nothing for me to eat here. I've done this before, you know. My little kid don't like vegetables, you know. That's why I put it in soup so I can eat it, you know. He still don't like it. I don't like that impulse. I don't like it. Don't make me eat vegetables. He's in there. He's talking all the time. So, oh, baby, we'll put it in some of this nice low sodium gumbo soup. A cup of it, weight measured, you know. And he can eat that, and he enjoys it, and he's fine. You know. But he doesn't get to go down and eat the yogurt and say, the only reason I'm going down to the frozen yogurt shop is the Brazilian girls work down there with the really tight pants. So I went down there to eat. I can't do anything to 22-year-old Brazilian girls anymore. And do a large yogurt.
I'm Frank, compulsive overeater, and I travel a fair amount. I eat out quite a bit. I go to fundraisers and various banquets and staff lunches and business meetings where they serve food and there are times when I do, like for instance, for a staff lunch,
I'll ask ahead of time, what's on the menu? And if it's something, and I'll say, well, can you order me a salad? When I go to like a banquet of some sort, you know, award ceremony or fundraiser, I usually figure out who my waiter is early, and I ask him, I tell him I don't eat desserts, I don't eat refined sugar, and do they have any fruit in the back, and can they prepare a fruit plate for me before, you know, so I give the chef a little warning. So it's, you know, but that's why for me, in my definition of abstinence, like a serving of protein, a starch, and fruits and vegetables. Because usually, anywhere I go, you know, I can put something together that looks like protein, starch, vegetables. And sometimes, you know, if there's no fruit, you know, I'll have the fruit at another meal or later or whatever. So anyway, that's the way I handle it. And you're right, I mean, it's getting harder because, like, the airlines, I mean, forget about it. So I do bring stuff on the airplane with me.
You know, this goes back to the question about being indecisive about my abstinence. If I'm going to a meeting, first of all, I'm always going to know what's being served because I have food restrictions and I'm going to find out before I go. If I don't find out, then I become a victim of my own poor planning. And that's setting me up to eat something that's not on my food plan and then using the excuse that I couldn't help it because that's all they served. Alright? So that is a setup. As was said here, you know, you eat first, you bring something with you. However, there are those circumstances, as Frank just talked about, where we find ourselves out of our element and we have no choice. I go hiking every year with a bunch of buddies in April. Last year, we were in Bryce Canyon, the year before, we were in Zion. And, you know, you only can eat in the park most places, so there's one or two restaurants just outside. So last year in Zion, everybody wanted to go the third night. They didn't care what my needs were. You know, they tried that a couple of nights. The third night, they're going out for pizza. I want to eat dinner with them. I go into the pizza parlor, and I say, well, what kind of toppings you have on the pizza? You have vegetables? They say, yeah, we got onions, we got peppers, we actually have some of this, and we have, you know, some red pepper, we have, you know, I don't know, I think they have asparagus or something. I said, and do you put any chicken in your cacciatore? And they said, yeah, we have grilled chicken. I said, yeah, can you make me a plate of just the vegetable toppings and some chicken? So they give me this steaming plate of perfectly abstinent food, and the other nine guys are all over me wanting to know what the hell I'm eating to look better than pizza. So it can be done. But it comes down to the willingness to stay on a program. It isn't an option, it isn't a problem. I ain't eating the pizza. Thanks.
Any other questions?
I have
a question. As a new kid on the block, my question is to monitor your weight loss. Do you recommend anyone on the panel? Do you recommend weighing yourself weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, putting a chart on the refrigerator, putting pictures of you as you start losing weight? What do you do to kind of monitor your weight loss? Or do you recommend that? What do you guys do? Anybody on the panel?
My recommendation, based on what I did, is if you're first starting out, and you're going to severely modify what you've been eating, then I would weigh myself once a week there. After that, once a month is plenty. Because otherwise what happens is you'll pee and you'll get on the scale and you'll cough a little bit, you'll get on the scale, you'll wash your hands, you'll get on the scale. I mean, you'll forever be on the scale and the scale then becomes your God. and you don't make any moves without it. So for the first week, because when I weighed that first week and I found out I lost 15 pounds in 10 days, that told me that I had to make a change and make it quick there. So that's going to be my recommendation based on what I did.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm a compulsive over-talker. My sainted sponsor told me, you know, he knows what kind of crazy person I am, and after a while he told me, throw out the scale. Get rid of the damn scale. And then he comes back to me about 2 weeks later and he says, I have to be honest with you. He says, I haven't had a scale in years, but I have one pair of pants in my closet that once every 2-3 weeks I try on to see how I'm doing. It's the same thing as the scale. He says, I threw out the pants this morning. Okay? I agree that in the beginning it's really good to weigh yourself periodically, but again, as somebody who weighed himself 6 and 7 times a day every time he went to the bathroom and after he ran, you know, that's death for me. I don't want to know, because I can do all the crazy things that I can think of to get rid of weight, and my weight's going to go up a pound on occasion. You know, my biorhythms are going to put it up a pound. And then what am I going to do? Am I going to eat because I'm disgusted that all that starving didn't do me any good, or am I going to starve for 2 more days? So it's really dangerous. So you have to find some sort of a schedule and make a deal with your sponsor of how often you do it. And if you can't keep yourself from staying off the scale more than that period of time, and get rid of the scale. Your body will tell you, people will tell you how you look, how you do. You'll know. It's not about the scale. Oh, and one other thing. I thought in my disease that the best invention that I could ever think of was to develop a treadmill with a built-in scale on it and a refrigerator on it. And I could open up that fridge and eat the ice cream while I'm running on the treadmill and see if I could keep that needle in the same place. That's what we call Michigas where I come from.
Before I lost the weight, I used to get weighed by a floor scale where they would, you know, put heavy cargo. Because there wasn't a scale, a floor scale, that would, or an upright scale that would accommodate my weight. I remember as I started dropping weight, I remember I still going to my doctor and going looking for that floor scale. And though I had already dropped about 100 pounds, my head was still at 400 pounds. And I remember the nurse saying, no, honey, you can get on this one now. And a part of me didn't believe her. The big mind blower was the time I went back to the big and tall clothes place. You know, by the way, I never saw any tall people at these places. I never saw any good people. All I saw was freaking people were as big in diameter as I was. And I went there, and I remember I was asking for some clothes. And said, Sir, we don't have your size. You're going to have to go, check this out, you're going to have to go to the normal people's clothes. I hadn't heard that word normal in a long time applied to me. And that was a big mind blower. Because that meant I had to start adjusting and accepting the body that was starting to get. So the scale never became an obsession. I think what started becoming an obsession in many ways was the clothes. I became like a 15-year-old girl shopping for clothes. You know, and I used to love to go to Kmart and buy a $10 pair of jeans. Ordinarily I'm paying 50, 60 bucks. So the scale never really, I guess because when you're obese, it really isn't that much of an obsession. I did find that as I got smaller, I found myself wanting to weigh more. You know? So clothes are a very good indicator. I still carry the seat belt extension that I have to buy for our new car because the strap will not go all the way around. And I got pissed off and I went back to the dealer. How dare you sell me a car that has such a short seat belt? So you're going to have to buy
by extension. So, you know, the scale has never been as much of an issue as folks have been for me. I think that's the thing. There's still a sense of joy of being able to wear the normal people's clothes. You know, there's not those half a dozen X's before my number there. You know, it's different now. So maybe, you know, I can be obsessive over the scale, of course I can. But not at this point. No.
And more than just, I weigh once a week on Thursdays and have for a number of years. And as I said earlier, the scale becomes a measure of honesty rather than a measure of weight. And that's part of my reality and part of the truth. So why not?
Great. And see, now we're all a little different on this because I have no business on a scale because I think one of Daniel's little things about thinking, as you're thinking, you know, does your thinking change when you get on the scale, Dave? Yeah, it does. You know, if I lost 15 pounds, I get high, and then the next week, because you're not going to lose 15 pounds, we all know, every week, then the next week I lost 7 pounds, and I was depressed. So it goes up and down. I got to admit it. I don't do well. And a sponsor said, if you abstain one day at a time, you're going to lose weight. And that's the truth. You know? So for some of us, it's a mind thing. And we could all figure that out. And we, you know, I don't know. That's me and my deal.
I weigh myself on the first of the month. And that's what I was told to do when I came in the program. I still do it.
Close the meeting. So this portion of